From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. As we go to air Tuesday morning, advisors to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are meeting. At issue is whether to recommend the COVID vaccine made by Pfizer-BioNTech, whether it should be given to children ages 5 through 11. Though CDC data show children younger than 12 made up less than 1% of all COVID deaths since January of 2020, children are still getting the virus, and many parents are frightened. And with the return to full in-person learning, this past September saw the most new cases and deaths for children in the U.S. Some parents are breathing a sigh of relief knowing the long-awaited children's shot is expected to get that CDC approval this week. I will say I am among them. But there are also plenty of parents who are on the fence about vaccinating their 5 to 11-year-olds. A survey by the Kaiser Family Foundation says barely 1 in 3 parents will permit their children to be vaccinated immediately. That tracks with an Axios poll finding 2/3 of parents were either reluctant or adamantly opposed. Meanwhile, for adults who got vaccinated at the earliest opportunity last winter and spring, there are questions about booster shots. Should we get them? Should we pursue a mix-and-match strategy, switching vaccines from the one we originally got? With us today to answer some of these questions and the latest COVID news is Dr. Awais Vaid, Deputy Administrator and Epidemiologist with the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. He's also a physician. Dr. Vaid, welcome to the 21st.
Good morning, Brian. Pleased to be here.
Also joining us is Dr. Vithya Sundaresan, Professor and Chief of Infectious Diseases at the SIU School of Medicine in Springfield. She's also a medical advisor to the Sangamon County Department of Public Health. Dr. Sundaresan, welcome back to the 21st.
Thank you for having me.
And finally, we're joined by Dr. Douglas Casper, Associate Professor of Internal Medicine and Section Head of Infectious Disease at the University of Illinois College of Medicine at Peoria. Dr. Casper, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Listeners, if you want to join our conversation, the number to call is 800-222-9455, especially if you have a question for one of our guests, 800-222-9455, or you can tweet us at 21st Show. That's at 21ST Show. Dr. Sundaresan, I'm going to begin with you. And before we get into the vaccines, I want to talk about young children and COVID. There was this idea out there early on that maybe kids are not as likely to get COVID. It's not as bad for them. But I mean, I think we're learning more about this virus and we know more now, and children are being exposed more because they're back in school. So can you just sort of update us? What do we know about how the COVID vaccine spreads among children, how they can catch it, what the consequences are for them if they do get it?
So yeah, some of the data that's being discussed, they're reporting about 1.9 million children who have had COVID with 8,300 hospitalizations and about 172 deaths in children. And that's way too many for children. So we are getting more data, and especially in the last month or so, it's escalated. They're estimating actually as of yesterday, American Academy of Pediatrics said that about a quarter of the new cases of COVID are all in children. So we are seeing a difference in trends where we earlier used to see people older that were getting COVID now in the last month or so, that trend seems to have changed. So vaccines definitely are going to help with the transmission. It's estimated that there's about a 90.7% reduction in symptomatic disease in children, which is going to be discussed a lot more in detail today with a lot more data that's going to be presented in the discussions with CDC and ACIP. So all that is looking really good. And moving forward, it just means less disruption in schools and learning, and holiday gatherings are going to be safer.
Yeah, and I want to come back to schools and holiday gatherings a little later on. But Dr. Vaid, let's talk about the vaccines for young children. They've been a long time coming, and I should say they're not for the youngest children yet. I was reading that Pfizer is not expecting until 2022 for children younger than 5, and that'll be for ages 2 to 5 first, and then even later than that for children younger than 2. But for the vaccine that we are expecting soon, how is rollout and preparation going for those children ages 5 to 11?
Right, Brian. So in Champaign County, based on our census population, about 16,000 kids between 5 to 11 year old will become eligible as early as tonight or tomorrow morning. And we have plans already in place to start vaccinations as early as this weekend. You know, Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, in partnership with all the other community health partners, will have a clinic Friday afternoon and Saturday morning. Additionally, Carl Foundation Hospital will also have clinics scheduled for Saturday and Sunday as well. I did talk to the pharmacies. Walgreens will be ready to roll out vaccinations starting this Saturday as well. So the we have the resources in place, and you know, as you heard from Dr. Sundaresan, that it will be really helpful if people can get it as soon as possible, so that they are much better prepared to see their parents and grandparents for the holiday season coming up.
And Dr. Vaid, it sounds like you're doing mass vaccination sites in Champaign. Is that correct? Because I'd heard that there may be some push to try and distribute more of these vaccines into pediatrician and family medicine primary care offices, thinking that maybe parents would want to have those one-on-one conversations as opposed to, you know, showing up at an armory or something like that.
Right. So the plan is for the first couple of weeks to have mass vaccination sites, so that the the people that are the most eager to get them and who've been waiting really patiently for a long time to get them vaccinated as soon as possible. I know the pediatric offices already are busy with catching up with the other required vaccinations for school. So they're already pretty busy right now, but within the next few weeks, pediatric offices will also start offering them within their practices itself. But the hope is that for the first few weeks, mass vaccination sites would be the best options, especially when offered during evenings and weekends as well.
Dr. Casper, I want to share some comments we got from our listeners through our text messaging. One person in Central Illinois said, "I have 4 kids, age 5 to 11, plan to have them vaccinated whenever the CDC advises to do so." Another listener, Yvonne in Central Illinois, texted, "I'm looking forward to my grandchildren, who are under the age of 12, being vaccinated ASAP." And another said that they even wish their kids were eligible for the vaccine sooner. But this is not universal, right? As I mentioned in that survey data, there's a lot of polarization surrounding vaccinating children, as there has been with adults, from well-known anti-vax people to, others who say, "Oh, my kid's immune system, I'm confident in that." As a physician, what do you say to the parents who are reluctant or just maybe questioning about the vaccinations?
Yeah, it's wonderful to hear the people that have commented that are in support of getting their children, grandchildren vaccinated. I think it's important that we discuss that the perspective about vaccinating children is slightly different than how we've approached adults. With adults with vaccination, we've largely used metrics that are preventing severe effects of COVID, whether that was by outcome, meaning how sick the person got, or whether it required hospitalization. As we've already mentioned, with children, the effective metric of the vaccine is preventing symptomatic COVID. So that's not necessarily that the child goes to the hospital, but it's preventing any symptom from infection. But what also needs to be talked about is that by vaccinating children, we're going to reduce the amount of spread of transmission of COVID within the home unit. And so there have been emerging studies within the last few weeks that have looked at situations where you have some people within the home that have completed vaccination, but not all people. And that does not appear to be enough to protect the individual home unit. And so in a small sense, that's an example of, very small local herd immunity, which we've talked about throughout the pandemic. But protecting children, not only from symptomatic COVID, but as potentially a driver of future outbreaks of infection, is really important strategy. And then on top of that, the child and the family get the secondary benefits of being able to remain in school, being able to remain in extracurricular activity, and starting to talk about more distant things such as travel or other programs that have been put on hold throughout the COVID-19 pandemic.
Okay, I want to go to the phones now at 800-222-9455. Sonia is on the line from Rockford. Sonia, thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
What's your question?
My question is, my son is 11 years old. He returned to in-person learning this school year. He contracted COVID. He tested positive. And I'm wondering, when is it safe for him to get the vaccine? Because we would like him to get it.
Okay, and how, just so we have all the information, how long ago was that positive test?
It was the beginning of October.
Beginning of October. All right, thank you so much for the call, Sonia. I'm not sure who is best to field this. Dr. Sundaration, I haven't heard from you in a while. What are you, to your perspective? What would you say to what you've heard so far?
Sure. The question about people already having COVID receiving the vaccine, we've discussed that with adults as well. Vaccine immunity is definitely stronger and more long lasting as compared to what you get from a natural infection with COVID. So highly recommend getting the vaccine despite a natural infection or in spite of a natural infection. Vaccine definitely adds value to the immune response. So it's stronger and more long lasting. With regards to what is a good time, CDC recommends that once the symptoms of COVID are better, they can get their vaccine. So about 2 weeks after the diagnosis of COVID, once the symptoms are all better, they should be eligible to get their vaccine. So by the time the vaccine is available in the doctor's offices, your son should be eligible to get the vaccine.
Okay. So never miss an opportunity to vaccinate, as somebody on a medical podcast I listen to always says. And it sounds like it would be safe to do so. Well, Sonia, thank you for that call. We appreciate the question. Dr. Vate, let me ask you, if there are a lot of parents, as we heard statistically, who are sort of reluctant, how much distance does that put between, you know, the idea of putting this pandemic behind us, or at least getting it more under control, if a lot of parents choose not to vaccinate their children?
That's going to be an absolute concern for us. I can tell you in the last 4 weeks or so, majority of our cases in Champaign County have been in children under 12 years of age. And in turn, they're also infecting their households. Dr. Casper mentioned this herd immunity within households as well. So it's going to be absolutely critical that, parents educate themselves, talk to their, pediatricians, for the children's doctors, talk to them about it. If they have concerns, get those concerns addressed as soon as possible, because we are planning on rolling vaccines out starting this weekend. And if I was a parent of a child who was under 12, I would have gotten it as soon as possible. You know, I have a teenager who's about 17 years of age, and she got her vaccine as soon as she became available, she became eligible. So I would recommend everybody gets it as soon as possible. This will be our best option to get the pandemic under control, in terms of family, in terms of schools, and in terms of getting things back to normal.
And Dr. Casper, I do want to ask about one other particular area of concern we've heard from parents about, and this is the idea of myocarditis, so weakening of the heart muscle. There's a very small number of teenage boys and young men after getting a COVID shot have reported this. Apparently, there were no cases in the FDA's vaccine trials for children, but I guess the study wasn't large enough to detect it. I understand you can also get this from COVID. So can you talk about that concern people might have about that myocarditis as a consequence of vaccination or of COVID itself?
Yeah, it is very important that we address potential any adverse effect from vaccination along with natural infection, because the decision that we're making here is that over time, if you are vaccinated or unvaccinated, it is highly likely you will come into contact with somebody with active COVID-19 infection. And so the strategy early on in the pandemic about isolation and distancing has largely been replaced in many parts of our country. And so you have to assume that a person will come into contact with COVID. Your vaccination status is helpful to predict, meaning if you're fully vaccinated, predict the severity of infection if you become infected. And so what we know is that the rates of almost every adverse effect are higher in people who have not been vaccinated who contract COVID-19 infection, and myocarditis falls within that category. There have been reports across the world, not just in the United States, but in other countries in the world, of a rare effect of younger males that have completed COVID-19 vaccination having clinical cases of myocarditis. Those cases are resolved with regular intervention, meaning they did not lead to prolonged effects, and they were certainly less in number than what was seen with natural infection.
Okay, so less from the vaccine than with natural infection. We need to take a break. We're going to come back and continue this conversation. 800-222-9455 to join us. This is The 21st. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. For 150 years, Busey has helped business owners and entrepreneurs navigate financial decisions, achieve long-term goals, and realize dreams of success. Busey. Fulfilling dreams since 1868.
Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about COVID-19 and the vaccine potentially for children ages 5 to 11. As we speak, the CDC, or I should say an advisory committee to the CDC, is meeting. Dr. Rochelle Walensky, the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, is made the case for vaccinating younger children against COVID-19. Approval is pretty much expected. The FDA has already signed off on this vaccine for children in that age group. This would be the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine for COVID-19. We're also talking about boosters and the idea of, you know, heterologous, I think, is the term that people are using, whether to mix and match, you know, Pfizer to Moderna, or maybe even Johnson & Johnson in there, as people are you know, coming, especially the first round of people who got vaccinated earlier this year. We're talking about this with Dr. Vithya Sundaresan, who is professor and chief of infectious diseases at the SIU School of Medicine in Springfield. Dr. Douglas Casper, professor of internal medicine and section head of infectious disease at the University of Illinois College of Medicine at Peoria. And Dr. Awais Vaid, deputy administrator and epidemiologist with the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. We welcome your calls and questions at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show. That's at 21st Show. Dr. Casper, I want to move to talking about these booster shots, this heterologous boosting. What is that? Is that something you're recommending?
Yeah, so we want people to complete vaccination, and we don't want there to be any hindrance to that. And so if part of that is that a person had an adverse effect or perceived the first effect with the first series of shots, there is now the option that they can consider a different shot to complete their series. This is, while this is kind of newer, how we've approached it in the United States, this is not a new strategy for what's been going on worldwide. Certainly within parts of Europe and other places in the world, mixing and matching based on availability earlier on was done and was seen to offer a similar protective effect to what we would call standard vaccine series. I've seen it be very useful with people that were hesitant to complete vaccine series due to perceived effect. And these can be smaller things, things that don't lead to hospitalization or even significant medical appointment. But we've seen people that report skin rashes or other conditions that have made them hesitant to complete vaccine series. And so because the benefit is largely the same, if this drives someone to complete series by being offered an alternative, then we are for it.
So maybe somebody wasn't happy with that first Pfizer shot, that as long as, you know, maybe they go with Moderna now, if that makes them feel better about it, then go ahead and complete the series, mixing and matching. if you have to, is what I'm hearing there. Dr. Sundaresan, what about you, though? Is there some benefit? I mean, I know a lot of people have talked about antibodies, but antibodies are not the only measure of immunity. So I guess without getting too far into the weeds there, is there, from your perspective, a benefit to sort of like seeking out, you know, somebody who got the Johnson & Johnson initially, and they really want to seek out one of the mRNA vaccines, or just get what you can when it's available to you?
That's the primary thing. I agree with Dr. Casper. I think the biggest thing is to complete the primary series with whatever you have available. And if there are any side effects, to go ahead and offer the other type of vaccines which are available. But NIH, had the study where they looked at 458 people getting heterologous vaccines, or mixing and matching of the vaccines. And they saw that the antibody response was significantly higher when these vaccines were mixed and matched. And you're right, they were only looking at one marker, which is a lab-based test, antibody response. But for immunity to be optimal, you also have a T cell response or a B cell response, a memory B cell response, which also contributes significantly to how we're protected against a virus or a bacteria, or any vaccine preventable disease. More to come in terms of how these are optimally tested, the B cell responses and T cell responses. And that's one of the thought processes as to why the boosters were not universally also offered to everybody. And as CDC says, greater than 65 years, 18 to 64 people with underlying diseases, and then also if they're occupationally at risk of higher exposures, to offer it to them. Because the antibody response does remain fairly good, even for variants in the younger age groups. So yes, with the heterologous vaccines, the antibody response seems to be higher. If side effects are of concern, then definitely it is recommended.
Dr. Vaid, let me ask you, one of our listeners from the northern suburbs of Chicago sent a text message in to say, our family is excited about the children's vaccine, and both of our grandchildren will be getting it as soon as it's available. We're looking forward to holidays with elderly family members without having to worry about whether or not to wear masks. And I want to focus on the mask part of that response. Is there a post-mask future coming to us anytime soon? I remember we thought so earlier this year. In fact, we had Dr. Sundaresan on for a conversation back in May. I just looked up when the CDC said the vaccinated can get rid of their masks. But Dr. Vaid, will we be seeing the mask mandate and recommendations going away anytime soon?
Well, we hope so. We hope so. I mean, nobody loves to wear a mask at all times, especially around family and during gatherings as well. So in our conversations with the State Health Department, I know they are looking at the data very closely. I know they are advising the governor on the mask mandates and what metrics to be looked at before lifting the indoor mask mandate. We were told early on that the governor is looking at, making some changes, maybe as early as the holiday season approaching. But on a call yesterday, we also heard that there has been a slight uptick in the number of cases statewide week over week. So that gives them a little bit of a pause in moving in that direction. But hopefully with the kid vaccinations rolling out this week, hopefully people will get vaccinated, and that will have an impact in the number of cases throughout the state. And again, like I said, the governor does make a lot of decisions based on data that is presented to him by the State Health Department. And that seems to me that by Christmas, maybe there could be a change in the shift of the governor's strategy, and we may see some relaxations of the masking in certain situations.
All right. Well, I hope that proves to be true. We will see what happens. Dr. Aves Vaid is epidemiologist with the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. Dr. Vithya Sundaresan is chief of infectious diseases at the SIU School of Medicine in Springfield. And Dr. Douglas Casper, section head of infectious disease at the U of I College of Medicine in Peoria. Dr. Casper, Dr. Sundaresan, Dr. Vaid, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.